So you became even more interested in doing some volunteer work over that period of time, and you became interested particularly, I gather, in this area that you'd now been reading about, or the events that you'd been becoming familiar with.
Yes.
And what did you do at that time about it? Now, we're talking 94, 95. You were in UK at that time.
Yeah, I just started reading and started gathering statistics, you know, how many children go hungry, go to bed on an empty stomach and things like that. I kept myself busy doing that when I wasn't doing voluntary work.
Okay.
And the figures were staggering.
I'm sorry?
I said the figures were staggering, you know, and
Was it that led you to think about going to work for the ICTR?
That was another accident, because the last meeting I had, the last OAU meeting I had was in February 96. And I decided to stay on to see if I could get something with the Economic Commission for Africa, which is another big UN office in Addis Ababa. And while talking to an interpreter, she asked me, "So what are you doing?" I said, "Not much. From time to time, I get to interpret in the UK. Sometimes I go, I mean, the lawyers take me, I do prison interpretation, court interpretation." I said, "Oh, that sounds interesting. Have you heard about the ICTR?" And I said, "No." She said, "No, do you know that there's a tribunal in Rwanda? And since you have some experience with court and prison interpretation, you sound like a good candidate for them." So she told me to go to the sixth floor at the ECA to get a personal history form. We filled out the form together. I had it faxed to New York. That was in February. Then I got an offer in June to join the ICTR.
Mm. And that was 1996?
That was 96, yeah.
Okay. And when did you actually physically come to the ICTR?
9th of September, 1996.
Where did you go?
To Kigali. I lived in Kigali for 4.5 years.
Okay. And in Kigali, what were your duties?
English translator. I did, at the very beginning, I did some interpretation, but I wasn't very comfortable. I don't like dishonesty in anything I do. I wasn't comfortable with it, so I just stopped to translation.
Let's talk about it just for a moment.
Yeah.
What were you translating? What kind of proceedings?
Mostly in Kigali, since we don't have the courts and all that, you do a lot of witness statements. That's where all the investigation goes on. So we have the Kenya Rwanda interpreters who go onto the field to look for witnesses, and then they come back with witness statements, which we now translate, because they have to. The witness statements have to appear in both English and French. So I did a lot of witness statements in Kigali.
And that was translating?
Translation, yeah.
Okay, you also said you did a bit of interpreting.
Yeah.
In what setting did you do that?
With the lawyers, sometimes they would have to talk about an indictment, or they had meetings, you know.
So you did not do interpreting of the witnesses themselves being
interviewed? No, because they don't speak French, they don't speak English. So we have Kenya Rwanda interpreters who go out to the field with the investigators.
Mm-hmm. Now, during your time in Kigali, which was a substantial time, for over 4 years.
4.5.
Why don't you give us, at least for a moment, a summary of what your evolution was and what your observations were and what that meant to you.
Okay. It was a wonderful opportunity to me. For me, sorry. It was a wonderful opportunity for me to now practicalize everything that had in my head, you know. All the figures, everything I saw on TV became real. It's not the same thing when you read or you watch on TV. When you get there, it's a different ball game. You have a maid in the kitchen who tells you, "I hid in the cupboard when this thing was going on." I mean, you just see that there are needs everywhere to be met. You know, you go to church and you see people who haven't had a meal for God knows how many days. You go to the market. I mean, you just see everywhere that people are suffering. And that was a wonderful opportunity for me to help. And that was when I now started. And since I wanted to do things in an organized manner, I just approached churches and I'll speak to pastors and I'll say, give me five widows in your church, widows who are really in need. Then I'll go to another church. So I was walking through church pastors, because I didn't want to approach people who will tell you that they are widows and then eventually you find out that they are not. So I just said to myself, I don't think a church pastor or head of a church would lie to me. So that was how I started in Rwanda.
You started your own.
Yeah.
This wasn't an official thing. This
was just my thing. Yeah.
Okay. And that was, in what year did you start?
Initially I started, there wasn't a structure as such, you know, so I would help from my pocket, I would talk to friends, And then I decided to, I like doing things properly. And around 1998, I started.
And the name of the organization?
It's called Sharing Love. Sharing Love.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you just talked over me, and I probably have been guilty of talking over you. So, so let me start again. The name of the organization that you began, you founded, was?
Sharing Love.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you did it structurally, if you will, in 1998.
Yeah, around 98, yeah.
And you did it unofficially from your pocket or maybe some friends. For a few years before that.
Yeah, because people were really interested in helping.
And who are the focus of this effort on your part, personally first, and then as an organization second?
Single mothers and widows.
And were their children involved as well?
Yeah, when you take the mothers, definitely you take care of the kids,
Single mothers and widows and their children.
Yeah.
Okay. And at the same time, you were doing translation
in
Rwanda. And I'm going to come back to the organization and to the charitable work in a few minutes, but I want to deal with the translation part for a while as well.